Welcome to the next edition of Business Law Focus. Great having you with us. And it's a pleasure to welcome Lisecha Morapi to the show, who's from Herbert Smith Freehills Kramer. Lisecha, we're going to speak today a bit about competition law, but also about Africa and the regulatory red tape that in some respects is disincentivizing investment in Africa. And I know you've looked into this topic, and it's something that we really need to talk about. And it also comes at quite a pivotal moment just in South Africa, where in Business Day, an article that's just come out is that Trade, Industry and Competition Minister Parks Tau has increased merger filing thresholds in a move that will see fewer deals. And this will require that will require less approval from the Competition Commission, which is a significant regulatory and red tape relief for domestic and actually the foreign investors. And I know we want to talk a bit about the foreign investors here specifically, who seem to be struggling with this red tape. But maybe if we can start with that raising of the filing thresholds. I know you do mention it and how complex it's becoming across Africa, but this is quite a positive move, right?
Yes, that's right. Evan, I think, you know, one of the things that businesses want, obviously, is usually when you are trying to do a deal, time is of the essence. And, you know, the less steps you have to take, the better. And so this move by the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition to raise the merger filing thresholds now means that less deals will have to go through the Competition Commission. At least that's the idea, that less deals will now fall within the sort of thresholds of what needs to be approved by the Competition Commission before you can implement them. And so that's definitely a good move, you know, in terms of relieving some of that red tape from businesses who do want to do deals and who want to do them quickly.
Yeah, and of course, deal makers out there will want to know kind of what are the next steps there, and that, you know, with a new transaction coming up, of course, and one of the points that we make is it should be checked against the new thresholds to determine if notification is still required and if filing fee budgets should be adjusted. And I know we want to talk a little bit about filing fee budgets, which are becoming a concern.
Yeah, no, of course. I think, you know, the in terms of the South African, the new South African thresholds and filing fees, the notice says they're effective from 1 May of 2026. And so all the deals that are kind of in the pipeline and have not been implemented before 1 May will then have to be checked against the new thresholds and the new filing fees. And as you say, obviously, if those deals meet the new thresholds, then you have to sort of check that, you know, filing fee budgets are aligned because those have gone up under the new threshold regulations. And just broadly, obviously, in Africa as well, you know, South Africa is only one of many countries on the continent. And so filing fees, if a deal has effects in more than one of the sort of many African countries with competition regulation regimes, you know, those filing fees can start to sort of add up. And, you know, they can be, as we'll sort of touch on as we go, they can become a little bit like they can be eye-watering in some instances, in effect.
Absolutely. No, that's a great point. Now, let's get to the investment incentives that we're looking at and the disincentives when it comes to this regulatory red tape. It's now commonly accepted by businesses that competition and antitrust regulation is something they must live and comply with across all markets in which they operate, and make a significant amount of their, revenues in, of course. And as you mentioned, Africa is no different in this regard. And I was looking at your research, and you're actually saying that there are almost 30 active competition regulation regimes in Africa, with one or two more to come, right? And then we have the African Free Trade Continental Agreement as well, that's trying to navigate and create a bit more harmony, which may be easier said than done, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, as you know, as I said, Africa is a massive continent, and You know, there's lots of different countries, lots of different interests. And there are now more, almost 30, different sort of individual regimes for each country, and about five regional regimes. And I must tell you, you know, the introduction of the sort of growing number of the regional regulators, it has been very helpful, because what it does, Evan, is it sort of streamlines the number of merger filings that parties looking to do a deal may have to do in Africa, because, you know, instead of going to every single one of the 30 different countries, you maybe now have to deal with, you know, three or four or five at a time. And so, you know, that's been very helpful to sort of streamline the process, and is what in our minds would incentivize, or has incentivized, people to do deals, because, you know, you have to deal with less red tape. Obviously, you know, the more of these regulators come live, the more you then have to become a bit more aware of kind of needing to coordinate between the regional regulators, so that it doesn't, you know, the higher number of these regional regulators doesn't take us sort of back into having to do too many filings, having to then pay too many filing fees, et cetera, which may then disincentivize, you know, deal makers from doing deals that have an effect in Africa, or, you know, one, although we hope not, they do deals and then avoid complying with, you know, regulations that they should comply with.
And of course, you make the point that too many cooks can spoil the broth. And this, I think, specifically is referring to the fact that you have various regional competition regulators. And that the problem is some national competition regulators do not always accept the regional regulator's authority to review and regulate mergers as a one-stop shop, right?
Correct. So if you think, for example, of, as I say, we've got currently five active regional regulators and 30 different individual country regulators, right? And obviously the regional regulators are made up of some of those individual countries which are members of the regional blocks. You then, if you have to notify, let's take an example with the West African regulator. The West African regulator, referred to as ECOWAS, has jurisdiction to review mergers that have an effect in some West African countries. You know, some of those countries don't accept the ECOWAS regulator's authority to review mergers on their behalf and issue decisions on their behalf. And so if you have to notify to the ECOWAS regulator, you may then have to go to also notify individually those specific countries that don't accept its jurisdiction to make decisions on their behalf. And not only do you have to notify them, you know, obviously you then have to pay fees to ECOWAS, which, you know, the ECOWAS filing fees can be eye-watering. And then you then have to go and pay the individual filing fees for the individual members that don't recognize its authority. And then, of course, having done that, then you've, you know, as a deal maker, you've now put your deal in the jeopardy of sort of, you know, potentially conflicting decisions, because ECOWAS can then make its ruling and say, absolutely fine, your deal is fine for us, we don't see any concerns from a competition perspective. But then an individual member may then say, well, actually, in our country, we do have problems, and we don't think the transaction will go ahead. And then it conflicts, and obviously introduces a risk that I think many business people wouldn't be tolerable, you know, to have that kind of uncertainty, I guess.
And just on the fees, I mean, we've mentioned it a few times, but I've heard that, you know, that some of the fees, and ECOWAS is an example I was reading, is it can be as high as $1 million.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the filing fees in ECOWAS, are set at 0.1% of the party's combined revenues from that region, and there's no cap. So 0.1% of revenues without a cap can be, you know, a huge number. I mean, in one experience we've had, the filing fees did exceed $1 million USD. And obviously the higher the revenues, the higher the filing fee will be. And so, you know, if you think of that particular region where you've paid $1 million to the ECOWAS regulator, and you then have a member state, like, for example, Nigeria, which doesn't accept ECOWAS's exclusive jurisdiction to review mergers affecting Nigeria, then you then have to go and pay an additional filing fee to the Nigerian regulator. So your filing fees just in that region alone can exceed $1 million, if you know what I mean. And then obviously, if you take a view that that's too high a filing fee to pay, and take a view that you're not going to submit your merger filing, then, you know, in terms of the ECOWAS regulations, then you could be on the hook for failing to notify. And the penalties are up for failing to notify are around 600,000 per day that you have failed to notify. And so it's not like, you know, we're not talking chump change in some of these fees.
Absolutely. No, that's quite scary there. And South Africa, of course, is not a member of one of these regional blocks, right? But they are involved in some of the deals. I mean, you could include Namibia, Botswana there as well. And then you've got that notification to regulators in those countries. And then, you know, you have members who recognize and don't recognize the blocks. So it becomes quite, I understand Egypt also, for instance, doesn't recognize, and Nigeria, as you mentioned. So planning a transactional timeline is a potential minefield by the looks of things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's absolutely right. So if you, as I say, in some of the mega African deals, you can have, you know, let's say a South African-based company with businesses or revenues across multiple African states, including some of those will fall within some regional blocks, some won't, like South Africa and Botswana and Namibia, as you mentioned. Some will fall into multiple different regional blocks. So yeah. If you think, for example, of a place like Kenya, which is part of COMESA on the one hand, and also part of the ECA on the other hand, the EAC on the other hand. And then you then have some of those countries that fall into regional blocks but don't recognize the kind of jurisdiction of the regional block to issue decisions. And so you end up in a world where you're sort of planning. If you're trying to do a timeline, and, you know, as I say, a lot of the time is of the essence with transactions, planning a timeline where you're now taking into account, right, how long would it take to end up in a place where you fulfilled all your CPs, your conditions precedent on a deal, which include usually competition regulatory clearance. You then have to plan for a timeline that has a sort of eye on which country some of the individual countries that don't have that aren't part of regional blocks, some of the regional blocks which some of the individual countries which don't recognize the regional blocks, and some of the sort of Then you take into account the regional blocks. How long will each one of them take? And obviously, the timelines are determined by statute, and they can go depending on the complexity of the transaction, the complexity of the issues. They can range from, you know, you can get a clearance in some countries within 30 days. In others, you know, it can go up to a year or even more in some others on the continent. So it is quite, I think it's, you know, it's very important, I think, for businesses, obviously, if you're trying to do a deal, to sort of sit with with your lawyers and take advice, obviously, and properly plan, because, you know, your lawyers, competition lawyers like ourselves, will be able to quite easily tell you how long, well, firstly, where do you need to notify? Secondly, how long each one of them will take, and obviously give you an estimate as well of the kind of fees from a filing fee perspective you could be looking at. So it's very important, I think, for businesses to sort of have that eagle's, that bird's eye view up front, so that, you know, you plan properly around it. But equally, you know, it's important, I think, for the regulators themselves to sort of get together and try and see if there isn't a way that they can collaborate to sort of help ease this burden and remove some of the uncertainty, I guess, from, you know, from the process, so that, you know, businesses looking to invest in Africa don't look at it and go, look, this is going to take too long, or this is going to take, it's going to be too expensive to invest in a business. And you know, you actually invite them to do so. You let them know that, you know, you're willing to sort of reduce some of the red tape, collaborate where you need to, and that sort of thing.
Which is critical, because Africa is crying out for investment. And obviously the deal making that's critical. Does the free trade area, Africa's free trade area, come into it? I know there have been agreements. There's also a protocol on competition policy, but the drawback there, of course, would be you need to ratify that.
Of course. And so, yeah, so I think there is all these, the individual countries with their own competition law regimes. Then there's a few regional blocks, and then as you say, the Africa Free Trade Agreement and that block is sort of coming, is going to come on top of all of that to regulate, as we understand it, deals that have an effect, sort of a continental wide effect. It's been ratified by the protocol and the treaty has been ratified by, you know, a significant number of the sort of countries on the continent. Although, as we understand it here at HSF Kramer, it's not all of them that have ratified, but a big number of them have. The vast majority of them have ratified it. And once that takes effect, obviously, then you then have to, in addition to all the sort of existing regional and national regimes, that's another one that you have to sort of keep in mind and have regard to when you're planning to do a deal. And then of course that'll, you know, that regulator, once it's established, will publish its own thresholds and what the fees will be. And so we'll have to wait and see how that all sort of pans out.
Yeah, because they're going to have to, if you're a member of a regional treaty, you're going to have to domesticate those treaties.
Yeah, and I think all the members will have to domesticate all those treaties. And then one hopes that where we end up is not like in the situation that we have now with some of the regional blocks, where obviously, you know, you've got countries that sign up to these treaties and sign up to what they sort of intend to do, but then when it comes time to domesticate the treaties and bind the country to abide by the sort of the regional regulator, we, you know, those kind of are left hanging in the air, and then you have states who then end up not recognizing the authority of that regional regulator because things have not been domesticated as they should have been before. And that kind of goes back to creating more red tape, more confusion about, you know, what people need to do. And as you say, you know, uncertainty is the enemy of investment, really.
And maybe just talk us through quickly the effect of binding agreements as far as a potential solution goes.
Yes, I think, you know, a lot of the time what we see happening is, you know, a lot of the regional regulators and some of the national ones conclude sort of MOUs with one another to kind of agree on at a high level what they'll do, how they'll collaborate and what they'll do in situations where they both have jurisdiction over the same deal. So in order to try and avoid having contradicting conclusions and orders and that sort of thing, they do MOUs. But the effect of those is quite often not clear in practice, and it's quite often not clear whether as a business you can bind them to that MOU, you know. And so what would be helpful, I think, for everyone and for businesses that are looking to do business in Africa is obviously if amongst themselves, the regional regulators, particularly ones that have, you know, the same or overlapping member states, agree a sort of framework that is binding on each other to sort of say, okay, look, if you have, we are two regional blocks, we have some overlapping member states, and of course some deals may not have an impact across the whole block and may have an impact in some, you know, a few states. And, you know, if those states fall properly within the region of only one regional regulator, you know, they can agree, I think, and we say they should find a way of agreeing that they won't both try and kind of review that transaction, you know. So one of them will say, look, of course, from a technical perspective, it looks like I may have jurisdiction over this transaction, but in effect, really, it doesn't affect all my member states, whereas there's another regional bloc whose member states, all its member states are affected. And so it's probably better for that regional bloc to deal with this transaction and not me. And so what that does, obviously, is then as a deal maker, you know, you have certainty that you're going to deal with one regulator for the region, and you're not going to get a different outcome from, you know, someone says you can implement the transaction in South Africa, while another person says, well, actually, from our perspective, you can't, if you know what I mean.
Sitcha, thanks very much for that. I think the message is very clear. Collaboration to establish a more cohesive and certain regulatory landscape. And I think emphasis on certainty there. And that is actually so critical right now. We need this. We need greater clarity, and we need more investment and deal making. So thanks very much for taking us through this rather complex world at the moment.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.